Hey there, everybody. Aaron Noonan here. Welcome again to the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco. And on this episode, it is part two of our chat with Fred Gibson, the 1967 Bathurst winner, multiple Bathurst winner as a team owner manager. We had so much to talk about that we had to split Fred's chat over two parts over 2 weeks. This is part two. We've got more of your great National Motor Racing Museum couch racer questions. We cover plenty of ground. We talk about the Nissan Gazelle. We talk heaps about the Nissan GTR. Plenty of questions about Godzilla that Fred was only too happy to answer. A couple of myths that he was able to either prove or disprove as well. Talk about some technical trickery and a Fred Gibson Bathurst win that many people don't stop to consider. So here we go. Buckle up. Time to start. Part two of Fred Gibson on the V8 Sleuth podcast, powered by Repco. Stephen's question, what became of the car that Scafey had his big shunt in at Eastern Creek, the Winfield Commodore? That's another one that's gone that he got rid of.
Crushed it.
Went down to Sims Metal for $20.
That was really a serious accident.
He's
lucky to get alive out of that. I couldn't believe that. Yeah, he was.
Were you there that day?
Yeah, I was there. Yeah. He was so lucky, you know, and the crew were so good, the way we got him out of the car and everything sort of thing, and that really knocked him about. That was really a serious accident. And the car dead set went crushed. I sent someone down to the crusher. We took what we wanted off when we got back to the workshop, and I sent someone down with the truck and made sure it was crushed. Because those sort of things, you leave them somewhere and all of a sudden someone wants them, and all of a sudden they're back on the track, someone's fixed them. So that didn't get fixed. That got crushed. Yeah.
Which springs to mind another little thing. Is it right that the Gazelle should have gone the other way? It should have been crushed,
but
it got away with it.
The Gazelle was an evaluation car, Nissan Gazelle. The Erringer got out to evaluate the Gazelle as a car
to put on the market.
Yep. And I convinced Nissan that should be a little car to give Scaife some miles in the car. So we made it into a race car, but it should have been crushed because we took the compliance plate off that and put on a road car. Right, another car was there because it was the only little four-valve car here. So we took the compliance plate off that and put on a road car and sent the road car down to the crushers and got that crushed, and it got crushed. But so that car, which Brian Henderson's got now in Brisbane, that was his first race car, yeah.
It's the car that Scafey won the under 2 litre touring car championship in 87 and drove at Bathurst later that year as well.
And a young guy bought it in Adelaide, a Nissan dealer bought it.
The Jarretts.
Grant Jarrett
co-drove with him up at Bathurst that year.
I think that was about that there?
Yeah, go on. I know where you're going with this, so you have to tell. So, you tell. I think I know what you're going to say.
You go with it. Go on.
Is this the one about how this was the year of the World Touring Car Championship and the you had to hit – I mean, always there's been a qualifying time at Bathurst, and Grant Jarrett was struggling to hit the time. Scafey was fast enough, but – mysteriously, Mark may have worn Grant's helmet to set the qualifying time to qualifying for the race.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Stibbard called me to the control tower.
Ivan Stibbard.
He pulled me to the control. FG, got a problem. I said, what's the problem? He said, how come Scafe can do so-and-so time and Grant Jarrett's been doing X amount of time in practice, and he said, but all of a sudden when qualifying comes, he's gone as quick as Scafe. I said, I'll give him a talking to. And he's okay. He was okay. But because I said to Scafey, this is bullshit. This car has to run for Nissan. It has to run. I said, you go and.
Because if Jarrett wasn't fast enough, it didn't matter that Scafe was fast enough, they wouldn't let it start the race.
Wouldn't let it start the race. Mm. So it wasn't going to run. And that would have been disaster for us, for Nissan. So I said to Scafey, you walk in the tent, just walk out with Jarrett's helmet and stuff on, get in the car and do one time lap and come and park the car straight back in the garage. And that's what we did. That's a true story.
You've got to do what you got to do to get in the great race.
Now, but Stibbard knew when he called me down the control tower. Why come that car's gone so 2 seconds fast and it's gone all day?
Just gave him a good talking to. Brendan Smalls asked, how quickly did George Fury adapt to tarmac racing from his rally background, and how highly did you rate him?
I rated George very highly, very highly. But when Howard said we want George to run on the Bluebirds, I said, okay. We went to Oran Park. In his Stanza rally car, which said the
which he raced some circuit racing in that for his license signatures,
yeah,
didn't he?
That's right. The stands, because the boys of the workshop, that's when Howard's running, they sort of lowered the suspension and made it more of a bitumen car instead of
He was in a sports sedan race. I got the photos. I think he was up against Edmondson's Alpha. He would have seen him every three laps go by.
So we used to go to Oran Park, finish up the car, stayed at Road and Track, and we used to go to Oran Park, and he'd come up, and we'd go there for a day's testing. I'd have a ute full of tyres, Wilson tyres, and he'd go up there and drive round and round and round because all his driving would be flick and catch it, flick and catch it.
Rally driver.
Rally driver. Mm. And I said, George, you can't flick and catch it. And we go days testing. We must have been weeks of testing over a period of time at Oran Park until he got the swing, turned it in, flow it, use all the road, the whole thing. And we wore so many tyres out, Howard said, oh, dearie me, we're using some tyres with George, aren't we? Because it was the Stanza. But he would flick and catch him. George was a great driver. What can I say? Very game. Had a good big heart. Some of the things you do in the Bluebird, I always think, God, how did you get away with that? Because the Bluebird was a very nervous car. Mm. Very nervous car, independent rear suspension, and even though it had been fiddled with a fair bit to make it a better car, we should never have done what we did with the Bluebird, turbo-wise, suspension-wise and that. But George, he drove that car better than I could ever drive the race car when we both drove together in Bluebirds. Mm. And he'd be switching the boost up, which you shouldn't have had, boost up, boost back, boost up, boost back.
We get messages about that all the time, ashtrays.
So, yeah, she was a little cheater car, the Bluebird, really. But, like, right now to see that the three Bluebirds we had have been restored in Australia, even the Japanese car now.
We should talk about that. That's just been finished, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So that was the car that Hoshino and Hosemi drove at Bathurst in 81 and 82.
When Howard said to me, we're running Bluebird at Bathurst, and he said, the Japanese are sending a car out and we're building a car here that George and I would drive. And I remember the day the Japanese arrived and we went to Bathurst, and my road car then was a 280C Nissan.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Beautiful car. She was turbo, but I put a turbo on her.
Of course.
She used to go like a rocket ship off the lights. Christine used to love it. And the 280C, so I picked them up at the airport, the Sydney airport, and we drove to Bathurst, and he said, we must go to circuit. Okay, we go to circuit. We had an interpreter. Must go to, because they couldn't talk English at all.
No
English. Mm. We go to circuit, and we drive around the circuit, and we go around once, and we go around. Please stop car. We stop car. Top of the mountain. Very dangerous circuit. This interpreter's telling me about the drivers. This is a very dangerous circuit. Ooh, because they stop at the top of the mountain where there's no fences there back in those days, you know, and they're looking over down the mountain and there's no fence over the top there. Very dangerous circuit, that's what you say. And they couldn't speak any English at all. And the Japanese mechanics, you know, were here with the car and our guys couldn't get near the car.
It was a rocket, their car.
Oh, shit.
Well, he put it in the shootout, I think.
Oh, he did.
Hosemi, yeah. Masahiro Hosemi.
On the front row. Didn't
I think he was third. I think he was second row.
Second row, was he?
But I think he blew it. In those days, you probably remember this, that it's not like now. We're in the shootout at Bathurst. You get one go.
Yeah.
In those days, you got two.
Two, yeah.
They only televised one of them when they did the highlights package.
Yeah,
but you got another go at it. Yeah. And I think Hosemi went back out.
Yes.
And had another go and blew the turbo. Trying to go a bit further. They must have wound it right up.
Well, so. we weren't allowed that. The Japanese mechanics were there. The Japanese drivers were there. And we could not touch that car. We weren't allowed to touch a thing on it. And when they qualified, they had the boost. She had the lot. Think about us cheating. I'd got no idea. And then they left that car here. And that became my Sydney car.
Yeah. That's when you raced at Amaru a lot.
Now
that's been restored to back, how you raced it.
Yeah. How I raced it. Yeah.
With the flares.
And brand new. It's been restored. It's beautiful. Done a super job.
It's great that all those cars have stayed around. So the three.
Well, you know what happened to the car? Sorry, can we?
Yeah, go on. Yeah.
The car disappeared. The car disappeared. Nobody knew who had the car and where it went to. Just boom, gone. The car. And see, when I went down there, there was only sort of two or three guys left.
Down to Melbourne.
And they didn't really like me anyway. because they had a free run for many years with Howard, because Howard was a product planning manager. He'd go and see them once a week. They used to run their own thing. They used to do their own thing. They had Ronnie Sayre was in the office doing the paperwork, and they just do what they wanted to do. And the cars weren't very George, I can't think of the guy's name there. Whatever they thought was right, and how to say, oh, not a bad idea, that'd be okay, we'll cover that somewhere, and all this sort of stuff. So the car, when I went there to take the place over, there was no Bluebirds there. You know, they're all disappeared because they saw, where'd they go? Anyway, the one that was supposed to be there was that car.
And the Japanese one.
The Japanese car, yep. It disappeared, and no one knew where it went, but one of our guys apparently did a deal with Howard and got it cheap. That I didn't know about, and it disappeared, and we didn't know at the time because that's how we found it. And he went up. He was a fabricator, and he went up north after because they couldn't handle me. They left me, and they went up north, and he worked as a fabricator, doing bows for boats. You know, the bow for the point, doing stainless steel welding and everything. So out of the blue, someone found that he bought the car. And he built a shed around it, which was his office at his house, apparently, up there, up north. So they found out about it, and Heafy and this other guy went up and they saw him and bought it off him, and had to pull this whole wire, to get it out of the garage, out of the shed, had to pull this whole side of the building down to get it. It had been stored there for years.
Hadn't done anything, gone anywhere.
Nothing at all. Pulled it out of there, and they bought it back, and what's his name, Alfred bought it. And restored it. Yeah, it's been restored back to brand new, beautiful.
Well, it's cool that those three Bluebirds have remained. And, of course, the history of the DR-30s, the HR-31s, the GDRs, the Commodores, the Falcon stuff is all cool. That pretty much, apart from the ones that we talked about that Scafie ended up riding off, everything else is pretty much around.
So most of our old cars are still around.
Philippe's got an interesting question here. How competitive would the lighter DR30 Skyline have been if there was an evolution version of it? Because Group A, like Ford did it with the Sierra, they had an RS Cosworth, it became the RS 500 with a bunch of mods that made it the behemoth that it became. Reckon that an evolution version of a DR30 would have been worth its while?
I don't think the Japanese were even interested in doing the evolutions of cars because we asked a question on HR31 about doing an evolution with different turbo and different this, and it's not possible, not possible. And I think, see, they'd ever have to done it because they're the manufacturer over there, and they would never have done an evolution of the Bluebird, that's for sure, yeah. Yeah, because Australian Bluebird, don't forget.
Oh, no, this is DR30.
But the Australian Bluebird was nothing like the Japanese Bluebird.
Oh, no.
You know, back suspension was different, all that sort of stuff, because it was built here.
Yeah.
And the DR30 Skyline, you know, it'd have to be a Japanese thing, and I don't think they would have done it. No,
Nice thought, but not quite there. Justin's question, at the end of 95, start of 96, of course, that's when the cigarette money disappeared. Were there any deals that didn't come to fruition that could have filled the financial void that was left by Winfield? Any deals that nearly got over the line, or
not really
proposals or things that
not really? This you got to think about. The cigarette money was fantastic money. You know,
huge
money. You know, I think our Peter Jackson money. I think Howard said to me when he did the deal was $750,000 for the year. And I think that got up close to $1 million, you know, it got to. The Winfield money, it's funny how you do things like the Winfield money was done because how did that happen? Happened through the agency, and they wanted to get back in the agency wanted to get back on the box, they used to call it.
They wanted eyeballs off TV.
At
the time, were they in rugby league in New South Wales?
Yes. They wanted to get back on the box. And a mate of mine from Adelaide, South Australia, a good friend of mine, and Graham Ferret. And the Ferret knew the marketing director of Winfield, right? And they were sitting having coffee at the cricket in Adelaide, and Des Hancock, he was the director, the secret, and he said to Des, what's saying, said to him, where are you going? He said, we're going over to see Ford about giving some money when I get back on the box television. He said, what are you doing that for? He said, well, what are we going to do? We want to get back on the box and Motorsport's on the box on TV. He said, why don't you go and see my mate FG? And he said, who the bloody hell's FG, you know? And Graham said, he's a good mate of mine. I've known him for years. He's a really good mate. And he said, go and see him. Anyway, he set up a meeting to have a coffee in town, the marketing director of Winfield and myself in town 2 days later, I think it was. Went in there and had coffee with the guy and he said, want to get back on the box. We want to have a sprint car. We want to have a drag car. We want to have a touring car. We want to have a bike team. I said, wow.
That's all in.
I said, you're kidding. They said, no. I said, can you assist us doing that?
Sort of create like a sponsor super team. So
yeah, they did.
George Tatnall in sprint cars.
Yeah.
Jim Reed in drag racing.
Yeah.
I think on the bikes at that stage, Matt Maladen or
I
can't remember who was riding the
Winfield.
It
was a champion, whoever it was.
Yeah, they were good guys.
Yeah.
And then the touring car.
Two
thing.
Bikes.
And the Winfield Triple Challenge.
And the
which you blokes never could win. And Peter Jackson kept winning it.
Exactly. And I said to him, we'd want $1 million for the touring cars. He said, shit, you're expensive. And I said, that's cheap, you know. I think it was $1 million, might have been more. Anyway, I said, that's how much money. And I said, but I'll put you in contact with the other people that do it. And they did a deal. And they were terrific. They were terrific sponsors. They'd send us it's things you don't know what cigarette companies did, the small teams of kids, no signage, helping little junior football teams. Little tennis teams, that sort of stuff. They spent a bucket of money doing those sorts of things.
Without logos, obviously they couldn't put it on.
No logos, no nothing, just supporting junior sport.
Mm. They spend so much money in motorsport.
Oh, God, yeah.
Huge.
Yeah. Anyway, I put them in touch and they did unbelievably good deals and then we started the Winfield team, yeah.
I remember that. On the other side,
I think it was $1 or $2 million. It was a lot of money.
It would have been a couple of mil by then, surely, for two cars.
It was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he said, shit, you're expensive. And we did the deal. And I didn't sign a contract probably for 9 months.
Just went along and
the money was in the bank.
Job done.
He said to me, he said, oh, if you give us all your bank details, yeah, we'll do a deal. Yep. He said, now we'll do a contract and that. He said, we'll put some money in the bank for you. And the money was in the bank in 2 days.
Bang.
Yeah. And I rang I had some contacts, and I rang, I said, how are you going with the bike deal? Was done. This was done. Reed was done. The whole thing.
Bang, bang, bang.
All done. All done. And they were unbelievably good sponsors.
Was there any thought to do what Philip Morris did, where they carried on for a year with Alan Jones and the pack leader?
Yeah.
Remember, sort of it looked a bit like a Peter Jackson car, but it had a bit of flashy yellow and white and pack leader, a nice generic name. Did you guys ever look at the possibility to do that with
weren't game to do any of that.
No.
Winfield, but what they, I tried to talk him into where Winfield's on the side, I tried to do it in this, talk to them about doing something else like that.
Looks the same, but the word's different.
No.
A bit like the Formula One teams would do with, remember that they had Benson and Hedges on the Jordans, but they would change it to Buzzin' and Hornets.
Yes.
Or the words looked the same from a distance, but when you got up close, the actual wording was different.
I think I might have suggested to them Gibson or something on the side in there.
Which you ran at the Brock Classic.
Did we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Scafie ran a single car at the Brock Classic and it had Gibson
in
on
same,
it rather than
in
Winfield.
In the same font lettering and, or whatever sort of thing or same thing with and did it. You know, that's exactly right. And you know what? No one noticed any difference. Nobody said to me, what's the new signage on the car?
Mm.
And we did it for an exercise.
Mm.
Did it in exercise, exactly the same, what do you call, type-wise and everything, Gibson on the side of the car.
Mm.
And I tried to talk them into doing that, but they said, no.
Too hard basket.
It was too hard.
Just flies too close to the wind.
Yes, it does. Apparently it was, and they were very strong at that. They were very strong. They got their value out of it. Mm. I think I said, open, do you want to come and see an eight-wheel car? And the guy said to me, what's an open wheel car? Having coffee with a guy. What's an open wheel car? I said, the one when the Mudguards here, because we had Scaife's car at Winfield.
Formula Raven, yeah.
You know, I said, you get an open wheel car, you've got touring cars, and you've got this and you've got that. What's an open wheel car? You didn't have any idea about motor racing at all. All you've been told to come down and do a deal. amazing, isn't it? Really?
Wow. Yeah. That stuff doesn't happen anymore.
And they were just, they were super sponsors.
Mm.
Super, super sponsors. Mm. And I suppose I was a bit dark on Ken Potter and Kerry Turner, who they were the Peter Jackson guys, because they really stole that for Cito to start his own team. Because we virtually had a verbal agreement to keep going with them. And that's when Bo came and said to me, oh, Glenn and I are leaving, and then they do the, and Ken Potter had organised that. I was pretty pissed off for a while about that. Mm. I didn't speak to Bo for a while about all that, because it's a typical Bo, but really he wouldn't come and talk to me about, hey, we've been offered to go and start our own team. So so it made me pretty strong to do the Winfield, especially when Des rang me and said, like, you know, we'll do a deal.
Mm.
You know, it's amazing things happened back in those days.
Mm.
But the way they used to send boxes of cigarettes, all the team, who smokes? Tell us what they want, we'll supply it. A box every month. And a box would come, a month's supply. And even Faye Richards used to get cigarettes here because one of her friends smoked or something, you know. And for Richo takes some. And so the whole thing is like, you know, we can't sell them, we can't do that. But when you find out what they did for junior sport with no signage anywhere, just helping out junior sport, they did a lot of work with that, a lot of work.
It's amazing to think that now, that was 1995 that the cigarette world. So we've, as a sport, motor racing, and you've been around and seen it all. So we weaned ourselves as a sport off the cigarette money.
Mm.
Now we've weaned ourselves off the manufacturer money.
Mm.
It was Holden and Ford particularly, and BMW involved, and Nissan, as you fully were involved in. So we've weaned ourselves back there.
Yep.
Always wonder what the next thing is going to be that weans us back from.
Interesting, isn't it?
It's an interesting one. It's so hard to know what the future is for motor racing. It's a far bigger discussion another time.
But you think about what I said. All they want to do is get on the box, television.
Well, and actually, that's an interesting one because I recall vividly Tony Longhurst, who's sponsored, of course, by B&H.
Yeah.
He would run the AMPS car series.
Yes.
Every round.
Yeah.
Why? It was on the box.
Box.
On the telly. They wanted yellow cars on telly as much as they could do, so they did every race that they could do. One of the races that you didn't do very often, though, for a period there, was the Sandown 500. Why did you guys skip that a bit? Was that you'd rather go off and do testing yourself? Or there was a bunch of you didn't do 90, 91, 92, 93. There's like 4 years in a row.
I don't know the real reason. Whether it was too close to Bathurst for a swing, I don't know.
I reckon you like doing your own thing and going off testing in private and no one seeing.
We did plenty of testing, I can tell you.
I think Scafie told me one day that he tested 1 year, it was 100 and something days, something like that.
We did off a lot of testing. Yeah.
All over the place, not just at one track. No.
We go testing. We go, like, I remember we tested at Malala one night. We went from Malala, to Western Australia to test. Yeah, you know, went across there to test for the touring car round. We were at Malala, so I said, we'll go across the day.
Well, we're on our way.
We'll go. And we hired the Serga for the day and tested for a day. You know, it's amazing how the Japanese, when we first tested the GDR at Winton, the Japanese were here. And we must have had a test day before they got here. It was wet. And the Japanese were here, and they're all over like a rash, wanting to know what the car's doing. And I said to Scavy, oh, go out and you should change the mode and give it full four-wheel drive. And the Japanese engineer said, Gibson-san, how do you do that? I said, it's raining, it's four-wheel drive, we'll go four-wheel drive. But how do you do that? And I said, on our control panel in the center here, we screw it round, we got mode one. One mode two.
Which was
our idea. We had Ross Holden, those people.
Guru, Ross. Yeah.
Right. And we had this, and we go one, two, and sort of more front wheel drive. Oh, you must show us how you've done that. So the things that we did, and I feel really proud of, that we re-engineered that car to be the best GDR in the world.
Mm.
And would have blown any other GDR away by a mile, by things we did. Like turbochargers, we did our own turbochargers in the workshop. And when the Garrett man came out here, we blew him away.
Hmm.
He said, who made the bush, that thrust bearing in your turbo? I said, we did. He said, what do you did here? I said, yeah, we did. He said, That's a great idea. We'll think about it. We should do that. Those sorts of things. We had some very good people. And we had a good workshop, like the machines we had there and everything. We did everything in-house, our own dyno, our own machine shop, our own fabrication shop. And like I look at some of the guys still now around in motorsport, they're all a lot of our guys, you know, those sort of things. But those things GDR-wise and like Nissan-wise, I suppose, we learned off Bluebird being a turbo car, just to puff turbos all the time. But the thing is, you just learn. And all of a sudden, why don't we try that? And when we start getting our own turbo balance and our own turbo machine and everything, and you've got your own machine shop that can make anything, you know, we'd make anything. And any castings we had, Kevin Drage in Adelaide would do the castings. What we'd do is give him the drawings, and we'd do the drawings. So the thing
really
is –
really self-sufficient. You're not relying on anyone else.
I didn't want to rely on anyone else. As a race team, we were in-house. Everything was done in-house. We didn't rely on someone to supply us anything, or not very much. Yeah.
Very small.
Very small, yeah.
So how did you go in 92 when they nobbled it? They brought in a few restrictions on all the different cars, but mainly the GDR to try to even it all out and give the other guys a bit of a chance. How did you get around? It was all about cutting the power for you blokes. How did you get around? Because this is another one of these myths that you can either say yes, true, or very false. How did you get around the power cut to still make power?
Didn't
they give you a pop-off valve?
Gave us a pop-off valve. It was an F1 pop-off valve they got. And it was supposed to be in a box and didn't come in. We made a box for it. And Cam's had it. It's in the box and the valve, and they'd come in the scrutiny to check the valve and make sure the valve was set where it should have been, sort of thing. But
Did you recalibrate your dyno?
Yes.
So when
Larry.
Right, yeah, yeah. You keep going, right, yeah.
We recalibrate. Our guys were so good at doing that. Larry Blood, I want to come and see all this stuff. What's going on?
Larry Perkins blew up. He wants to see with his own eyes.
He wants to see it, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to see it all. So Larry come down and put that engine on the dyno, and he's checked the engine and all that sort of stuff and everything, and pull the string and, you know, bang, bing, bing, pop off valve, pop. Yep. Okay, I'm happy with that. But the thing is, he didn't organise. We changed the dynos, all the dyno electronics on it. So I did that, did all that. So then when he left, we went back to our normal. But the valve did work. Yes, the valve did work. Yeah.
It did cut the power
we tuned the engine to suit the power valve then. You know. And the thing is, we built our own turbos, so we did our own thing there. And, you know, the Ross Holes of the world and those sort of things. And when I tell Larry that trick, he gets pissed off with that, he does. You know, Larry's like, he's been dudded. I'll tell you about a quick one. Intercoolers. Got to run the original intercooler on the HR31, it might have been GDR. And he said that intercooler's not the right intercooler. I said, Larry, it's the right intercooler. He said, no, it's not. It's not the right intercooler. He said, okay. I said, well, what about I go in the truck and I get an intercooler spare out of the truck that's in a Nismo box, done, ready there. Okay. Went and got it, pulled it out, sealed, all the Nismo tape on it and everything, where they wrap them up and everything. It's the same. Same. You didn't know we used to have the tape that make the boxes up, to sort of tape the thing in Nismo tape. So it's our intercooler and Nismo box with the right tape and everything on it, because they, you know, the sticky tape was all the – we used to have rolls of that tape. We used to make our own up.
So simple but so effective.
Yeah. And he blew it. I said, well, it must have been HR31, I think. He was blowing. I said, mate, it's the right intercooler, because that one stood out. Oh, I was supposed to say HR, because that was there. You saw when you put the bonnet up, you saw the intercooler.
Straight there, right in front of you.
Yeah. It was HR30. He couldn't believe why the HR31 was going so well.
There was a big stink leading into Bathurst 92 because of the weight of your cars, and you threatened not to go.
Yep.
Was there ever a chance in hell that you would not have gone? Was that a political ploy to put the pressure on Cams?
I would have not gone, yes.
But you had Winfield and you had Nissan. Yeah,
Winfield was fine.
And they were fully supportive.
You run the team, whatever you want to do.
How close did you get to
court, you know.
Yeah.
That went to, it was a court hearing about that, you know, court hearing. But we'd already planned what we were going to do and run the extra weight and where we were going to put it. Of course, the rear cross member, we filled that with lead and everything, sort of thing. But we, I felt we had to take them on, show them we've fair dinkum, you know, and give it a shot. And there it went to court. I remember that went to court and the judge was there making adjudication on whether we're going to go over there or not. Larry was at the court case. Surprise.
Larry hung out at your place a fair bit while I was there, didn't
he? He used to be funny. He was good. He was good. But you know, I say, Larry, what about your cylinder heads? Nothing wrong with cylinder heads. I said, Larry, I know that they're cast different to the cast cylinder heads. I know they're different sort of thing. And they were, you know, and all this sort of stuff. He had the ports moved down on the cylinder head castings and everything for the V8 Holden engine. God, strike me.
The irony thing is, as much as he blew about GDRs back in the day and all that stuff, you guys actually see a fair bit of one of these days. You're both good friends with Alan Moffat.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, the people who would follow the sport might have always thought that, you know, from back in the day, there's niggle that carries on, but I think everyone, you know, the world moves on.
We just got on with life. And Larry was really a hard competitor. But he fiddled the V8 Holden engine, not the Chev engine. That was nothing like in a production engine, you know, because he had the inner at Holden that changed things.
Got it done.
And he did. Yeah. He did. He really did.
I don't know that he had the tape, though, to box his boxes like you did. Tape. But it was pretty good. I like the tape.
I used to sit in my office all day doing nothing, thinking all those things I had to do.
Better order some new Nismo tape.
Yeah.
David White's got a question. You and I have talked about this before, and I know you have talked about this publicly, so it's all right. Did you really, when they start like this, it's always good, did you really do a midnight swap of Godzilla behind closed doors?
No.
Well, Bathurst 1990, you swapped cars.
Oh, back in
remember that one?
Yeah, that we did too.
There was two. There was car one and car one T.
Yeah, there was two. Car. Yeah, we did. Mm. Yeah, and that's why. And you know who blew about that?
Channel 7.
Channel 7 blew
because they didn't want to change the race cam.
But they come and change it all over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the point was that in those days. You could have a test car that you just used for testing on the Wednesday, Thursday, and then you weren't racing. It wasn't entered.
Yeah.
But you weren't allowed to have your race car and your T car.
They weren't Winfield cars. They were Nissan cars.
Nissan. Yeah, Nissan 1990. Car. So if you look closely, I think the mirrors are the giveaway of which car was the same car.
Yeah, we swapped
Friday,
cars.
Saturday to Sunday. And
I managed to went to Channel 7. I said, guys, problem. What's the problem? I want the camera out of that car and put it in that car because we took the doors off this car because the car, we took the door off and put the door on that car with a number on that car and that. Well, that's we could do ours pretty good.
But rewiring an in-car camera for a race car is actually not a quick job.
They were up all night.
Yeah, you would have not been on their Christmas card.
Oh, shit, no. When I went and said, what? I said, I think it did something with the four-wheel drive was playing up, I think, on it. I think the four-wheel drive was playing up and we didn't know how to fix it. And I said, well, if I can fix it, we'll just swap cars.
Yeah. Fixed it.
That's true. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Well, we're getting a lot more trues than falses on some of these questions, aren't we? I think it's a reflection of our V8 Sleuth listeners being keyed
on the case.
Right on the case. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Michael Shaw. This is another one that you can prove or deny. Ask Fred about the GTR clutch. Pretty sure the statute of limitations has passed. Anything special or different or weird about the clutch in a GDR?
We run just a Girling triple play clutch, which we're supposed to run. I don't think I can't remember unless you've got something specific you could bring up. No,
we might need more information on that one from the question of where he's aiming there. Not sure.
The clutch was just a Borg Warner or whatever they were, Girling or whatever they were, triple play clutch in it, which you could run. Yeah.
Pretty standard. That makes sense. John Stryker covers off a question we kind of covered. It was made out in the media that for 89, Nissan didn't want the association with cigarettes, hence Peter Jackson not involved. But then, of course, Winfield came on board a couple of years later. So what changed, or was that just a story that wasn't?
No. Well, I think Peter Jackson went. And we run the car as Nissan. They couldn't fund it as good as it should have been funded with the money. They didn't nowhere near the money Nissan were putting in, what the cigarette companies were doing. And I mentioned the finance director come across and had a meeting with me, but I'd already worked on other things. And it was funny how he come in and he sat in my office at the Healy Road. Was it Healy Road still? Must have been. Anyway, where it was. He come over and sat in the office. He said, Fred, we're going to pull the sponsorship and we're going to take the team over and run the team ourselves. And I said, Is that right? He said, because, you know, you're spending too much money and it's costing this. This is when Nissan were paying the bill. He goes, we just can't afford it. I said, well, I'll get you out of the problem. I said, you know where you go on the back mudguard of the car, which they were as Nissan on the back mudguard?
Mm-hmm.
As Winfield on the back mudguard must have been. And he said, yeah. I said, well, I sold that spot and I'll give you Nissan there. And the car's going to be sponsored by Winfield. And he died. I said, so for what you're putting in, you get the back mudguard. Now, if you don't want to put the, you don't want the back mudguard for the money, well, you know, it's my team. It's my car. I own it all. It's my team. So, like, I'll give you the back mudguard. He nearly shit himself. He absolutely nearly shit himself. And that was the finance director. Listen, I said, I think it was Leon Daphne was the boss then. It might have been Leon. I said, you go back and speak to Leon and tell him that's what I'm doing. I'm running cigarette sponsorship, I've got Winfield money, and I'll give you the back mudguards with Nissan on it. And that's how the car run. And I got the money. So, but he come over, he was taking the whole team back over. Nissan going to run the whole team and take a bag over and do it as a Nissan team.
Mm. Well, that stopped that.
That stopped that. Yeah, that's, so that was true. Because that was the Winfield car had Nissan on the back mudguard, didn't it?
Rings a bell.
Yeah, I think it did.
Yeah, I think you had Shell as well on those cars.
Yeah,
but it was primarily a Winfield racing car.
Yeah.
Brendan asked a question that kind of gets forgotten about a fair bit over, probably the Nissan thing overshadows the 99 Bathurst win with the wins car with Murph and Steve Richards. It seemed, he said that obviously DJR were fast that day, I think with Radisich and Johnson, those cars were quick, but does that feel like one that everyone forgets, that Bathurst win? Clearly, you know, because you were heavily involved in it, but it sort of feels like it's one that doesn't pop up in the highlight reels some reason. I'm not sure why.
And we won that, don't we, didn't
we? Yeah.
Who was driving then?
Richo and Murph, 1999, Commodore VT.
It was sponsored by...
it was a Wins car.
Wins car, yeah. Gary Dunbrill.
That was the first year that Greg and Steve joined the team after the two Darrens, Pate and Hossack, had driven.
The
previous year, so.
Yeah. That didn't give us much hope in that. For some reason, like, we were a pretty low-key team then, we were, as far as people and money was concerned. So I suppose it did to – did they have trouble? We must have gone
all day. No, you just trucked on all day.
Yeah. No, nothing special.
No, a win's a win.
A win's a win, yeah.
Yeah. Dimitri's got an interesting question here.
Yeah.
I don't think you did, but did you ever get to drive the full spec Godzilla in its prime? Did you ever drive one of those? You ever just
as a road car?
No, a race car.
Well, Scavy had a road car. He had a road car anyway. I drove a road car, but I never drove the race car.
Because once I stopped driving, you went, I'm not driving cars, even testing or anything.
No testing, no nothing. No.
Yeah. So Pete Gagan did, but you didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never. No. After I don't think I've driven the Holdens at all either.
No. What's the last race car you would have driven in anger? The Bluebird.
Bluebird.
When did you decide, probably going to stop now?
Well, I think actually when the Blue, when Howard offered me the opportunity to take the team over. You know, because the thing is, we went down there when they built the first DR30 Skyline, so it was in the Bluebird, wasn't it? But I think the last race car I drove was Bluebird, and I don't think I ever drove a DR30 even.
Probably a good thing in a way.
It was a shit of a car. DR30 was a very bad car.
You got some results with it though, so it worked out okay.
I think also too, we got some results because the drivers that were in the car, Glenn, all due respect to Glenn, at the time being young and not really knowing what a good car would be like, probably.
Didn't know any different.
And George, being a rally driver, he just drove.
He fanged it anyway.
So, like, you know, because we just thought those sorts of cars, like it, and even the Bluebird wasn't a nice car to drive, but the Skyline DR30, until we sorted it out, it was a pretty ordinary car.
You know? Probably a good thing that you didn't bother having a steer, particularly at the start of it. Daniel Cottrell's got a question. Do you regret not following Harry Firth across to Holden in 69? He says that you, from his understanding, your business was looking after the Ford press cars in New South Wales, but you could have got another Bathurst or two maybe the dealer team. Was it ever a chance of going with the
Harry
Fox?
Harry wanted me to go. Harry wanted me to go, yeah.
Why didn't you?
Got no idea, actually. Yeah.
You stayed with Ford. I guess there's a better deal going.
I don't know, because like I was doing the press cars in Sydney and those sort of things. And I don't forget I had my own sports car then, back in those days, sports car. And I was driving for Neil Allen as well. See, I did a lot of driving. Like I remember Service Paradise one day when Neil wasn't there. I drove his Mustang in one race, which was left-hand drive, right-hand gear change. I drove my Lotus Elan, because he bought mine as well.
Yeah.
Lotus Elan, which is right-hand drive, left-hand gear change. And then I drove the sports car. He still owned the sports car. I hadn't bought it off him then, which was right-hand drive, right-hand gear change, all in one day in every race.
Hard to keep up with.
Yeah, I did. Jeez. I did. I had the three cars there and raced the whole three in one race. Yeah,
that's cool. I like that. They don't do that anymore.
No, they don't.
Very rare. I mean, guys have got their programs in supercars or one category, and that's all they're doing. But
actually, Neil Allen was a good guy to drive with. He was he's in a home now. Neil is there, and I haven't seen him for years. But you know, really, the cars he had and bought, like that little M4A McLaren I drove at Warwick Farm. What a great car!
That'll be worth a bit now.
Oh, God. What's his name in New Zealand's got one of those? What's his name that runs one of the surges made over in New Zealand? He's got an M4A McLaren.
We need to go and have a go when COVID clears. Go and see some of the stuff. There's all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff that's in New Zealand.
But the thing is, like, you know, I used to, when I drove for Neil, the Brabham was a great car to drive. I did a Gold Star in that. A Gold Star series in that car. And that's when I got to know Brucey Richer very well, because he was the Climax man. he said about it, because he used to mechanic Frank. Well, he crashed the 19 of Frank's that time. Yeah, the 19B at Warwick Farm. Richer was driving that and crashed it and wrote it off. So the whole thing is, Malloy was working on the cars, and he used to flick the switch on the Brabham, the little button you press back to reset the tacho on them. And I used to give it plenty and then reset it
as you drive you back.
I read it at about the 7. And one day Malloy, I went to reset it back, but he put a little hole in it with a split pin in it. And when I come in, he looked, he said, 8-2, eh? Couldn't push the button back in, could you? Oh, God, yeah.
Peter Malloy is the guy you're talking about there. A lot of people will know Pete. He's sadly not with us anymore. Right there in engines and car prep and all that stuff over the years. A couple more. We're nearly done. It's been a big stint. Well bowled, my friend. You've done very well here. Jeff Bishop, he's got two questions. The Nissan Exa Turbo, discuss. It's probably a short conversation, isn't it?
Shit of a car.
I talked to Thomas Mesera, as I've got to know his pronunciation correct.
Yeah.
And there were plenty of cars that we referred to in his journey over racing, which is and life, which has been an amazing journey. Yeah. If you haven't heard the podcast, listeners, go back and have a listen to it from last year, because it's a doozy. Yeah. Not just the racing, but his life in Czechoslovakia and how he got here and all that stuff. But a few different cars popped up and he would say, shitbox, shitbox. What about the Maserati Biturbo that you drove? Shitbox. So, Exa Turbo?
Shitbox.
Shitbox.
I drove it once, said to Christine, "You are a hero. This is a terrible car. It is a shocking."
He's a brave lady to drive that.
Jesus Christ. I said, "You are kidding. Is this what you drive? Do you drive?" Because the torque steers so much, you know, it had so much power, you know, because the boys at the workshop built it, you know, and Trevor Jones and can't think of his name, they built the car. And we went to call the first time, and I said, "Wow, this is a shocking car," because it had a bigger turbo than I should have had. Legally, went back on a bigger turbo, but it just had equal length. Didn't have equal length drive shafts. One was long, one was short. So the torque steer.
Yeah.
And she wanted the power steering on, then she wanted it off because it had power steering, and I thought it was better with power steering. But I tell you, driving that car, she was an absolute hero. Remember the first time she drove that was at Sandown. Sandown and the driver's briefing, true story. Sandown must have been a touring car round, and she drove.
I reckon it was the Enduro.
Enduro, was it?
Yep, the might Castrol 400.
Might have been that.
Yeah.
And the driver's briefing, because every time you change gears, it changed lanes. Yeah, so you change it, change again, again, we'll move. And the driver's briefing, and Howard had the new wing had to go on the back, and we only put it on for practice. He wanted a bigger wing, which we put on the back of it, and to give it that much more downforce as well at the back, she said it was good. Anyway, the driver's briefing, I don't know who brought it up, whether she brought it up, and someone brought it up and said, Christine, you just do what you've got to do in your little car and we'll do the best way we can to get past you. True story. Because the thing is, up the back straight or down the front straight,
didn't know which way it was going to
go. They didn't know which way it was going to dive. And they said, you just drive the car. All the drivers are there. You just drive the car, Christine, and we will know when we should be able to pass you. Because it just changed lanes. And we finished up putting, we made it so it had a jockey and put equal length drive shafts, made it better. But it had one drive shaft was this long and this one was this long. So it torque steered everywhere. And it had as much horsepower as the Bluebird.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Had a mind of its own.
In a straight line. Actually, Christine, I don't know how she ever drove the car. She must be a bloody good driver. Must have been
some serious brave pills going on back in.
She wasn't drinking them either.
Probably drove her to drink after driving that thing. Jeez. Yeah. Jeff's other part of his question, I think I know your answer to this, is Scaife a total rat bag away from the media? When he's not on telly, is he a rat bag?
Yeah, no. He's mellowed. he's mellowed to what he used to be, I can tell you. He's mellowed.
Too intense back in the day?
Oh, yeah. Very intense. Very intense. You know, but the whole thing is like, you know how I got him to come to Melbourne, don't you?
No, do tell.
Chris and I decided we want a young guy in the car. This is when we took the team over years and years ago. And I said, okay. And I don't know how his name came up. And we said, this young Scaife doesn't go all right. And I knew his old man.
Is this when you snuck up and watched him race the lasers? You didn't tell anyone. You just
didn't tell anyone.
Wandered up and
hired a car, drove there, flew up, drove the car, stood in the crowd in a gold corner, watching him drive in the laser race. And the finish was a handicap type thing up the front where you qualified. And then the last one, and he won them all. And I said to Christine, I think he's half a chance. And went and spoke to his old man first, who I knew, and said, is he interested in getting a drive and coming to Melbourne and be one of our drivers? That's how it all started. Yeah. And he come down. It was expensive, but he come down and that's when I had Bo coming down as well, because I wanted Bo to get Bo out of his business in Sydney was difficult. But offered him the same, Glenn could get a drive. Glenn was going to be the driver with George, and Suda could come down and maybe get a drive. So he took a punt on getting a drive.
Worked out all right. And also
that's why I bought the open wheel car, which I bought that.
The Formula 2 car?
Yeah, we bought that because I knew anyone that could drive an open wheel car would make a better touring car driver.
So you did that with Glenn and Scaife. Yeah, so Glenn had to go in that Formula 2 car.
And Scaife had to go in the other one.
The Formula Holden, the Winfield and the SPA. SPA or SPA?
SPA, SPA.
Same thing.
Yeah.
You know, I know what you mean.
Formula Holden.
Yeah, that's the one. Nearly there. Two to go. Brett asks, when you rolled the HO Falcon up at Bathurst, was there more than just cut up oranges in the console?
Yeah, shitting myself, I think, really.
I don't think that was in the console.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. Yeah, the thing opened up and, like, it was everywhere. Yeah, fixed that car up, didn't I?
Yeah, well, that's, yeah.
Yeah, serious business.
That's one way to do it. Yeah. Just oranges? No apple?
Well, Frenchie told me how to do that. He used to take oranges in his car every time he raced the car. He'd take oranges. It's like Dougie Shivers just to smoke a cigarette.
But he used to put it down when he went past the pits, though.
Past the control tower. Yeah. It's like Ivan Sipo coming speed to bear with what the Grand Joe driving the car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so the oranges fell out everywhere.
Oh, you could not get away with anything these days. One last one, Corey State. Corey always asks us these types of questions, but I think it's important. We're nearly at our 100th episode of the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco. What kind of cake would you recommend for the 100th podcast? What should we go for? What's your cake of choice if you were?
Fruitcake.
Yes.
You know why?
Why?
Because I still, Peter Nielsen's dad. Matty Nielsen.
Listeners will know Techo from his long time at Walkinshaw's. He did work experience at Gibson's back in the day, didn't he?
I put him through engineering course.
It's all your fault.
I put him on.
Yeah.
I've known his dad for years and years and years. His dad runs the big retirement village of Chad Jacobson's.
Chaz. Chaz Jacobson used to race open wheelers.
He's got the cars he's got now, Chaz. Ferraris, Lamborghinis, Bugattis. He's got the cars everywhere. Anyway, I've known Peter for years because I put Tico through his school, uni course. So we've been good mates for years, sort of, really. And Pete's been one of those sort of guys that's always – we were in Adelaide at his birthday party the other month. You know, he's one of those sort of guys that's really a good guy. And knowing Tico and what he's been through – and I think the Walkinshaw thing, that's a bit of a problem, I think, really. Yeah.
Mm. But where's the fruitcake connect?
Oh, sorry. Sorry, the fruitcake.
I'm hungry now.
No, his mother is a terrific cook.
Right.
And she makes the fruitcakes every year, this big fruitcakes.
Mammoth. Our listeners can't see, but they're long.
They're that big. I'll show you one in a minute. It's one here.
Oh, we might have to attack that when we stop the recorder.
And she makes fruit. She's a terrific cook, right? And they're wonderful people. And we go to dinner every Friday night with Peter and Estelle and a few others as a group. And at the end of the Christmas time, she makes cakes for all the group. And she makes something like 20 fruit cakes.
I've got to get in this group. This is a good group.
20 fruit cakes, and she gives everyone she knows a fruit cake. But Pete has to buy the stuff, the fruit, and she buys special fruit. Then she buys the grog. He spends $1,000 on grog for the fruit cakes. Fair dinkum, $1,000 on grog for the fruitcakes.
I love fruitcake. I love Christmas. I think you've helped convince me that we should have fruitcake for our 100th episode.
I'll want a fruitcake for you for Christmas.
We'll see if we can do a good deal.
There's probably some leftover from Christmas. She put a night on down the restaurant down at Mount Eliza and invite all their friends for Christmas night, and everyone gets a fruitcake.
I'm coming next year. Lock me in. We might save the chocolate cake for the 200th episode. We'll do fruitcake for the 100th. That sounds good. One more little thing before we go. We do this with all our guests. You know, the top 10 shootout for many years at Bathurst. It's the bit where the drivers get to do their thing. One lap, get it right, get it wrong. You might taste a war along the way. We've got our own Motor Focus top 10 shootout. And Motor Focus is one of our great supporters and partners, model car company based in Queensland, motorfocus.com.au, or drop in and see them, One Stockwell Place in Archerfield, Queensland, so up Brisbane way. Dimitri and the team are all over the model cars, and I'm sure there's a bunch of FG model cars that have been released over the years that are high value there that are on the shelf ready to buy. But they bring us the top 10 shootout, where basically it's word association.
Yeah,
I name a few things. You tell me the first word that comes in your head to describe that thing or person. Ready for this?
Yep.
Don't get me in trouble with the lawyers, FG, for crying out loud. Jim Richards.
Great guy.
You can have two words. I'll let you have two words. Mark Scaife.
A problem.
Alan Moffat.
Different.
In a good way.
In a good way.
In a good way. GDHO Phase 3.
Terrible car. NEHO, terrible car.
Revered by Ford fans the country over, but clearly not too many of them race them at 150 mile an hour down Conrod.
Can I make a comment on that?
Oh, you may.
When you're coming down the straight at Conrod at 150 mile an hour in the straight when it was a straight.
Before the chase
and the flag was there, and you say the windsock was there, and you'd say to the guys in small cars, when we come down the straight and you see us coming, give us plenty of room because as we come across the hump, we come off the road and go across the road. in a HO, which it would do. And as soon as you get over the hump, what you start doing then is put your left foot on the brake pedal and start pumping the brake pedal up with your left foot, getting ready to stop at the end of the straight, because you've got no brakes to start with. So you've got to pump with the left foot on the brake and get the pedal up. Then you go off the throttle at 150 mile an hour, slowing down starting now, and put your foot on the brake to stop the car. And you've got a brake pedal there. That's what you do every lap from about the 10 lap onwards for the whole race.
And if you're in a Mini, get out of the way.
Get out of the way.
I think we covered it off earlier, but we didn't quite put that bit full stop on it. If you were in a small car,
get out of the way.
Move over. Move over. Bluebird.
Great little car, but a shit of a car.
Great, but shit.
Why I say great, in a straight line rocket ship, with a suspension it had around the corners, shit of a car. Hard work.
Hard work. Or hard. Yeah. There's the word. GTR.
Great car.
Bathurst.
Great circuit.
There's a lot of great going on here. We need to break this
cycle. Bathurst. Great driver's circuit. You know, really, really puts the how good you are to the test because of the speed you're doing. Mm. Like we're talking about a phase three a minute ago, 150 mile an hour in a Falcon. So, like, you know, it's and like I drove my sports car there, and I drove a Brabham there. I drove a Gold Star racing on the Brabham, and you know, that sort of circuit with those sort of cars, great circuit. Great, sir.
No concrete walls back then.
Yeah, either. Exactly.
Harry Firth.
Terrific old prick.
I think you're the first person in 90-something episodes of our podcast to use that description in this segment, but first time for everything. Glenn Seaton.
Oh, a great guy. Great guy. Good driver. Disappointed he left us at the time he did, but a great driver.
Hard top.
Good car. Good car.
Not a shitbox.
No, good car.
All right.
The two-door finished up being a good car. Of course, we could do some things with it, but the best thing it had on was good wheels and tyres.
Got to have some
rubber
paws to put on
the
ground.
Yeah, on the ground, yeah.
Can have all the power in the world, but if you can't use it, it's not much good. Mate, thank you. Thanks for having me. Thanks for hosting me. It's been a delight. We've ploughed through the time frame. I think we've answered just about every question we could get to from our listeners. I'm sure that there's a million other topics that we could go through. We'd be here all week, though, to do so. So, again, thanks for having us, and hope you've enjoyed the sit-down. It's good to catch up.
No problem. It's been a lot of bullshit, a lot of lies, but the racing drivers tell lots of lies. But most of the lies I've told are good lies, and the thing is it happens that way sometimes.
Written, spoken, and authorised by Mr. F. Gibson of Melbourne.
Pleasure being here.
There you have it, Fred Gibson on the V8 Sleuth podcast. Great to catch up with FG. Always full of stories, few that I'd not heard, few that I had heard, and some that I love hearing and would happily hear over and over again. A big thank you to Freddie for making the time to sit down with me and open the door and welcome me into his home. Really appreciate it. Don't forget, too, you can visit our V8 Sleuth bookshop. The website is bookshop.v8sleuth.com.au. The Wellington Street Race book that tells the history of the New Zealand street race in Wellington. I gave Fred a copy because the Nissan GTR from 1990 is on the cover. By the time I spoke to him the next week, he'd read the book cover to cover and was looking for another book to read. It's a really important part of New Zealand racing history. And for any of our Kiwi fans or the Aussie fans who love touring car racing, I reckon it's one you need to add to your collection. Jump on the website, bookshop.v8sleuth.com.au. Don't forget, every Monday, our Repco Supercars weekly episodes drop with previews, reviews, news, stats, all the bits you need to know about the Repco Supercars Championship. Hey, thanks everyone for your podcast feedback. We really appreciate it. It was great to see people send us lots of stuff on socials, whether it be pre or post episodes. Tell all your mates, subscribe as well through your favourite podcast platform so you don't miss an episode and you get the alert every time a new one drops. Add yourself to our newsletter list. Jump on the v8sleuth.com.au website, sign up there, and you'll get all the links to our latest stories on our site. You'll get advice as to when new items are being opened to pre-order or various deals and things that we're up to. And follow us on socials. A lot of you already do, but Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, we're busy and active on all of them, and you can connect with us there. In the meantime, that's another edition of the V8 Sleuth podcast powered by Repco. Hope you enjoyed the chat with Fred Gibson. We have got lots of chats coming up for the rest of 2021. We look forward to chatting to you soon.